Okay, well, as you probably know, what I'm going to say at this point is, turn with me, if you will, to the place where this week's Torah portion begins. It is the book of Numbers, or Bamidbar, in the wilderness, because that's where it takes place, chapter 25. And last week, I'll actually kind of take a little bit of a run at this. We finished with the story of how Israel was talked into by somebody, and we later find out that it is the evil televangelist of his day, Bilaam. Anyway, they joined themselves via the whoring women of Midian, essentially, to Baal of Peor, and the anger of Yahuwah was kindled against them in a major way. And as a result, then they slayed a whole bunch of people. And then behold, it says right there, one of the children of Israel came up and brought unto his brethren a Midianitish woman, right there in the sight of Moses. In other words, they were rubbing folks' noses in it, in the sight of all the congregation of the Bani Israel, while they were weeping at the door of the tent of meeting. So, meanwhile, Pinhas, here is the name of the Torah portion this week, because that's how it began, Pinhas, son of Eleazar, the son of Aaron the Kohen, the priest, saw it. He got up from the midst of the congregation. He took a spear in his hand, and he went right into the chamber after that man of Israel, and he thrust them both through, literally in the act, right through the bellies of both of them. And it says, so the plague was stayed from the Bani Israel. And those that died by the plague, in other words, before Phinehas got it done, 24,000 people had already died. And that takes us to this week's Torah portion, where it begins. Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and the first word he says is Pinhas, that fellow we just talked about. Son of Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest, has turned my wrath away from the Bani Israel, in that he was very zealous. Now let's pause and go slow here, because there is a lot of really interesting stuff, not least of which is that Pinhas is going to get the covenant of peace for doing something which, well, today we would say is an act of violence. He turned my wrath from the Bani Israel because he was very jealous. Now, the word in the Hebrew is kana, the root word there, for my sake among them. So, I did not consume the Bani Israel in my jealousy. So, he saved a whole lot of people. We don't even know how many. Behold, he says, I give unto him my covenant of peace, shalom. And this is an interesting one as well, because you know there are the jots and tittles, the scribal notations in the Torah. And this shalom is one of them. Sometimes shalom is spelled without the vowel. It's spelled with just a sheen lamed mem, mem sofit, the ending mem. But in this case, there is, in fact, a vav in there. And what's different about this vav than any other in the book is it's broken vav. So lots of things that could be read into that. Okay, so he gets the covenant of shalom. The broken vav is the scribal notation that's in here. In other words, it's a vav that is split in the middle. And sometimes vav is likened to a nail. The number associated with vav is 6, or the number of man. So some will suggest, hey, this has to do with a broken man. And when you see broken man referencing the same verse as covenant of peace, I guess a lot of us, we tend to think in a similar direction. That's kind of fascinating. And furthermore, the Torah says this is an eternal covenant of peace, everlasting priesthood too. It shall be unto him and to his seed after him the covenant of an everlasting Kohenimship, because he had this kana, he was zealous for his Elohim, and he made atonement for the Bani Israel. Now it tells us the name of the man that was slain from Israel with that Midianitish woman. He was Zimri, a prince of Salu, among the Simeonites, a prince of his father's house. Meanwhile, the name of the Midianitish woman who was slain was Cozbi, daughter of Zur. He too was a head of the people of the father's house in Midian. And Yahuwah then spoke to Moshe, and he said, vex or harass. Now that word there is zaror. Zaror the Midianites, and smite them. We see this word in a couple places, including in Leviticus 18:18, where a man is not to take a second wife as a sister to one wife in her lifetime. Specifically, it says, to vex, to zaror her. Okay. Meanwhile, this verse says, these are the folks that are harassing you by their wiles. They're harassing you. And they're doing so by means of kind of a Clintonistic, well, today we would just say a psyop. That's exactly what they've done. They beguiled you in this matter of Peor, worshiping this fake god. Also in the matter of Cozbi, daughter of the prince of Midian, their sister, who was slain on the day of the plague in the matter of Peor. So this has to do with Peor. It came to pass, it says, after this plague, that Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and to Eleazar, son of Aaron the priest. Remember, at this point, Aaron's gone. And he says, take the sum. In other words, lift up the head is the normal way that it's phrased in the Hebrew. Lift up the rosh, the head, of Kol Ha'edat, all the children of Israel, the entire congregation, from 20 years old and up, by their father's houses, all of them that are able to go to war in Israel. Now remember, that does not include the Levites. So Moshe and Eleazar the priest spoke with them in the plains of Moab by the Jordan at Jericho, and they said the following, take the sum of the people, or lift up the heads, 20 years old and up, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe and the Bani Israel that came forth out of the land of Egypt. Now what we know, of course, is that all except the two that weren't supposed to die, that would be Joshua and Caleb, have in fact died at this point. And now we're going to get the census and the results. And I'll read the first one of these, and then we'll kind of abbreviate them as we go through some of the different tribes here. Because what's going to happen is we're going to see a comparison, if you will, or at least we can do the comparison of the tribes. And we'll note that some of them have basically maintained. Some are slightly bigger, slightly smaller, but one or two have taken a major hit. Reuben, firstborn of Israel. The sons of Reuben. He had several sons. Hanoch, or Hanach, the family of the Hanachites, Palu, family of the Paluites, Hezron, the family of the Hezronites, and Carmi, of the what? Carmites. These are the families of Reuben, those that descended from him. They that were numbered were 43,730. Then we're going to get the listing of the sons of all of those individuals that were named there. Palu's son Eliab, he had in turn other sons, so grandsons of Palu, Nemuel, Dathan, and Abiram. And these are the same Dathan and Abiram, it says, the elect of the congregation. Remember, in the unfortunate revolution that was attempted and failed in the company of Korah, they died. They strove against Yahuwah when the earth opened up her mouth and swallowed them together with Korah. And when that company died, when the fire devoured 250 men, and they became an oat, a sign. Okay, notwithstanding, not all of the sons of Korah died, it says. Sons of Simeon, after their families. And we'll abbreviate some of the names here. They got Nemuel and Yamin and Zerah. And of the families of the Simeonites, there were, in fact, 22,200. Now, this one is kind of dramatic because originally there were 59,300 of them. Sons of Gad, after their families, the total there, 49,500. Sons of Judah, Ur and Onan, remember they died in the land of Canaan. After their other families, you had Shelah, Perez, the sons of Perez, Hezron, and of the Hezronites, Hamul, the family of the Hamulites. And all of those that were numbered of Judah and his descendants were now 76,500. Of Issachar, the families that were numbered were 64,300. Zebulun, after their families and the names of the sons there, those that were numbered were 60,500. Joseph, now remember in Joseph's case, he had two sons that were essentially adopted, grafted in, families of Manasseh and Ephraim. So we get a separate listing here. Sons of Manasseh of Machir, the family of the Machirites. He begot Gilead, and then in turn the Gileadites. These are the sons of Gilead, it says. Yazer, the Yazerites, Helek, and of Asriel, and of Shechem, the family of the Shechemites, and of Shemida, and of Hefer. So lots of sons in that line. And there's this other notation in here. And this, by the way, is going to serve as a place we're going to see several references in Torah. Zelophehad, the son of Hefer, didn't have any sons, only had daughters. The names of the daughters of Zelophehad were Malah and Noah, and it's actually just Noah in this case as opposed to Noah like that other fellow, Hoglah, Milcah, and Tirzah. So these are the families, it says, then of Manasseh, the other son. We're going to come back to those five daughters here in a minute. They that were numbered to them, 52,700. Then on to Ephraim. Ephraim and their families, there was Shuthela, the family of Becher of Tahan. And then Shuthela in turn has a son, Aaron. And these are the families of the sons of Ephraim according to those that were numbered in that line. 32,500. And then it says, in turn, these are the sons of Joseph after their families. So two lines, Ephraim and Manasseh. And as we know, that line is going to end up being through Manasseh, the line of, or through Ephraim, rather, the line of the kings of the northern kingdom, later the lost tribes. Meanwhile, the sons of Benjamin, after their families, we got Bela, and Ashbel, and Ahiram, and Sephupham, and Hupham. The sons of Bela, Ard and Naaman, and he had additional, the family of the Ardites, the family, of course, of the sons of Naaman, the Naamites. These are the sons then of Benjamin and their families. All of them that were numbered, 45,600. Then we go to Dan, and the families of Dan's son, Shuhamites, looks like the singular one in his case. Those that were numbered in that line, 64,400. Asher, and he has multiple sons, Imnah, Ishvi, and Beriah, or Beriah. And Beriah has sons, Heber, of Heberites, and Malchiel. The name of the daughter of Asher, it says, was Sarah. And that's an interesting one. It just kind of appears in there. We don't get the names of the daughters very often. These are the families of Asher, then, according to those that were numbered of them, 53,400. On to Naphtali, and those that were numbered in the family of Naphtali, 45,400. At which point it tells us, these are those, all of them, that were numbered of the B'nai Israel. They had the head lifted up. Total, number 603,550 was the number before. Now, the total is 601,730. So we're down almost 2,000 people over those times of wandering in the wilderness. It turns out he was obviously correct. Yahuwah warned them and then made good on it. Your carcasses are going to fall here in the wilderness. So it says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said, unto these the land shall be divided for an inheritance, according to the number of the names. So this essentially is the pre-entering the land census, by which it's going to be determined how much of the land goes to each of the various people here involved, or the various families that are involved. Okay, so they're going to divide the land according to the numbers that we've just seen here. Those that have bigger, you give more land. To the fewer, you shall have less inheritance. To each one, according to those that were numbered, is how the inheritance shall be given. Notwithstanding, the lot is still going to be divided by lot. According to the names of the tribes of their fathers, they'll inherit. So when it comes time to determine how much land, that's going to be based on the census. But as to which land, that will be determined, it says, by lot. According to lot, shall their inheritance be divided between the more and the fewer. These are they, then, moving on to those that don't go to war, but that are going to be numbered, of the Levites, after their families, of Gershon, and of Kohath, and of Merari. We have the families of Levi, the Libnites, the Hebronites, the Mahlites, the Mushites, and the Korahites. Remember, Kohath begot Amram. The name of Amram's wife, this is going to sound familiar, right? Amram had a wife named Jochebed, the daughter of Levi, born to him in Egypt. She bore to Amram two folks. We know the names well, Moshe and Aaron. It actually says Aaron and Moshe. Of course, the order of the boys was first Aaron, then Moshe, and Miriam, their sister. Unto Aaron were born Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. And we know Nadab and Abihu died when they offered that strange fire before Yahuwah. Those that were numbered, it says, of this line were 23,000, every male from a month old and upward, because they were not numbered among the B'nai Israel, because they did not have an inheritance given them among the B'nai Israel. Those that were numbered, though, by Moshe and Eleazar the Cohen, who numbered the B'nai Israel in the plains of Moab, thereby the Jordan River at Jericho. But guess what? Scripture is careful to point this out. We already knew this, but here we go. Among those, there was not a single man of them that was numbered by Moshe and Aaron the priest, this last time we saw it, who numbered the children of Israel at the wilderness of Sinai. Because remember, we remember, but Scripture is going to make sure we don't forget it. For Yahuwah had said of them, they shall surely die, Bamidbar, in the wilderness. And there wasn't left a single man among them, save Caleb, son of Jephunneh, and Joshua, son of Nun. So the people who drew near at this point are the daughters of Zelophehad, the ones we just talked about a couple minutes back. Son of Hepher, son of Gilead, son of Machir, son of Manasseh. of the families of Manasseh, of the tribe of, in turn, Joseph. These are the names of those daughters. Remember, Mahlah, Noah, Hoglah, and Milcah, and Tirzah. And they stood before Moshe, and before Eleazar the priest, and all the princes, and all the congregation, at the door of the tent of meeting, and they asked the following question, or more of a statement within a question. Our father, they said, died Bamidbar in the wilderness. He was not among the folks, and I guess they think this is important to mention. I can't help but think they're right. He was not among the company that gathered themselves together against Yahuwah in the company of Korah. But he was not sin-free. He died in his own sin, and he had no sons. So, why should the name of our father be done away with from among his family because he did not have a son? All right, so again, the question, why should his family name be done away with because he didn't have a son? Give us, they request, a possession among the brethren of our father. So, Moshe brought their cause before Yahuwah, and he got this answer. He said, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe and said, the daughters of Zelophehad speak rightly. Surely you'll give them a possession of an inheritance among their father's brethren, and you shall cause the inheritance of their father to pass unto them. So far, so good. Well, if he doesn't have a daughter, here's how it's going to work. Speak to the men of Israel and tell them, if a man dies and he does not have a son, well, then the inheritance that he would have had is going to be caused to pass unto his daughter. If he doesn't have a daughter, well, then you give his inheritance to his brothers. If he doesn't have any brothers, then you give his inheritance to his father's brothers. And if his father has no brothers, then you give his inheritance unto his kinsman that is next to him in his family, and he shall possess it. So whatever the next nearest of kin is, that is the one that inherits that land. And it shall be unto the Bnei Israel a statute of judgment. And that word, of course, is huchat, as Yahuwah commanded Moshe. Yahuwah then said to Moshe, get yourself on up into this mountain of Abarim. Behold, in other words, you now get to see the land which I have given unto the Bnei Yisrael. And when you have seen it, basically your time is up. When you've seen it, you'll be gathered unto your people, just as Aaron your brother was gathered. Why? Remember, he doesn't need to be reminded, but we do. Because you rebelled against my commandment in the wilderness of Zin, in the strife of the congregation, to sanctify me at the waters before their eyes. In other words, he failed. These are the waters of Meribat Kadesh in the wilderness of Zin. And Moshe, this time, speaks to Yahuwah, and he said, let Yahuwah, the Elohim of the spirit of all flesh, set a man over the congregation. So, he's just been told he's going to go, and now he's saying, well, you know, I need a successor. A person who may go out before them, who may come in before them, who may lead them out, and who may bring them in. The congregation of Yahuwah should not be as sheep who have no shepherd. Then Yahuwah said to Moshe, yep, okay, you take Joshua, son of Nun, a man in whom already, in other words, is the Ruach, and lay your hand upon him, and set him before Eleazar the priest, and before Kol Ha'edah, and give him a charge in their sight. And you will put your honor upon him, that all of the congregation, Kol Edat of the Bnei Israel, may hearken, may shema. And he will be the one to stand before Eleazar the priest, who shall inquire for him by the judgment of the Urim before Yahuwah. At his word they go out, at his word they come in, both he and all of the Bnei Israel of the congregation, the Kol Edat, with him. Even all of them. Again, ve, kol, ha, edah, all of them. So Moshe did as Yahuwah commanded him. He took Joshua, set him before Eleazar the priest and all the congregation, laid his hands upon him, and gave him a charge, as Yahuwah spoke by the hand of Moshe. The next chapter says, Yahuwah spoke to Moshe, and he said following, command the Bnei Israel, say to them, my food, which is presented unto me for offerings made by fire, of a sweet savor unto me, you shall observe to offer to me in its due season. And you shall say to them, this is the offering made by fire which you bring unto Yahuwah. He lambs of the first year without blemish. Two, day by day, for continual burnt offering. So we're talking about what are often called the morning lamb and the evening lamb. One lamb, it says, in the morning, the other at dusk. And a tenth part of an ephah of fine flour for a meal offering, mingled with a fourth part of a hin of beaten oil. This, it says, is a continual burnt offering, which was offered in Mount Sinai for a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. The drink offering thereof is a fourth part of a hin for the first lamb, the one lamb, in the set-apart place. You pour out a drink offering of strong drink unto Yahuwah. The other lamb you present at dusk as the meal offering of the morning and as the drink offering. You'll present it. In other words, you're going to do the same thing. And an offering made by fire is what it is, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. On the Sabbath day, different than the other 6 days of the week, two he lambs of the first year without blemish. And basically, most of this looks like it's going to be doubled. 2/10 part of an ephah of fine flour for meal offering, mingled with oil, the drink offering thereof. This then is the burnt offering of every Sabbath, besides the regular continual burnt offering and the drink offering thereof. Now, on the new moons, Rosh Chodesh, you shall present a burnt offering unto Yahuwah. Two young bullocks, one ram, seven he-lambs of the first year, again without blemish, and 3/10 part of an ephah of fine flour for a meal offering mingled with oil for each bull. 2/10 part of fine flour for a meal offering mingled with oil for the one ram, and a several-tenth part of fine flour mingled with oil for a meal offering for every one of those seven lambs, for a burnt offering, a sweet savor, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah. Their drink offerings will be half a hin of wine for a bullock, a third part of a hin for the ram, a fourth part of a hin for the lamb. This is the burnt offering for every new moon throughout the months of the year. And there's one he-goat for a sin offering unto Yahuwah. It shall be offered in addition to, beside the continual burnt offering and the drink offering for that one. And in the first month, on the 14th day of the month, this is going to sound familiar. It's yet another time where we're going to be reminded of his Moedim. Must be important. That's all I can think of here. It is the Passover, the Pesach le-Yahuwah. And on the 15th day of this month, there'll be a feast. 7 days, you'll eat unleavened bread. First day, that's a holy convocation. No manner of servile work, but you will present an offering made by fire, a burnt offering to Yahuwah. Two young bullocks, one ram, seven he-lambs of the first year, all without blemish, along with their meal offering, flour, fine flour mixed with oil. 3/10 part you'll offer for the bull, 2/10 for the ram, and a several-tenth part you offer for every lamb of that seven. One he-goat for a sin offering to make atonement for you. All of these you shall offer in addition to, beside the burnt offering of the morning, which is, again, continual. This manner you'll offer all day, or each of these days, daily, for 7 days, the food of the offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. It'll be offered beside the continual burnt offering and the drink offering thereof. So the point is being made and repeated here. The offering of the morning lamb and the evening lamb is every day. 7th day, you have a holy convocation. You do no manner of servile work. So this is the end of that week of the Feast of Unleavened Bread. And also in the day of the first fruits, when you bring that new meal offering unto Yahuwah in your Feast of Weeks, this is the 7 times 7 plus 1, right? You shall have a holy convocation. You'll do no manner of servile work, but you shall present a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. Two young bullocks, one ram, seven he-lambs of the first year. And their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 part for the bull, 2/10 for each ram, and a several-tenth part for every lamb of the seven. And that one he-goat to make atonement for you. And again, besides the continual burnt offering, the meal offering, you'll offer these. They are to be unto you without blemish, along with their drink offerings. The next chapter, 29, says, in the 7th month, so here we're going to talk about the fall feasts, in the 7th month, on the first day of the month, you have a holy convocation. Again, you will do no manner of servile work. It's a day of blowing the shofar, and it is literally Yom Teruah. The word appears right there in this verse, chapter 29, verse 1, Yom Teruah unto you. You'll offer and prepare a burnt offering for a sweet savor unto Yahuwah, one young bull, one ram, seven he-lambs of the first year without blemish, along with their meal offering. Again, it's fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 for the bull, 2/10 for the ram, and a 1/10 part for every lamb of the seven, one he-goat for a sin offering to make atonement for you. So that pattern is consistent here. Coming up on the time of the 10th day of that month, that will be a holy convocation. This time it says you shall afflict your souls, your nefshim. You shall do no manner of work. Humbled, bowed down. Of course, this we're talking about is the Day of Atonement. You shall present, though, a burnt offering unto Yahuwah for a sweet savor. One young bull, one ram, seven he-lambs of the first year. They will be to you, of course, without blemish. with their meal offerings, and the same meal offering as we're used to seeing, one he-goat for a sin offering, in addition, besides the sin offering of atonement and the continual burnt offering and the meal offerings and the drink offerings. So all of these things are cumulative. On the 15th day of the seventh month, you have another holy convocation. This one, you shall do no manner of servile work. And again, you shall keep a feast unto Yahuwah for 7 days. This is the one that's analogous to the wedding feast. We're going to be talking about the time of Sukkot. You present a burnt offering made by fire, a sweet savor unto Yahuwah. Now, this one is going to be different than essentially most all of the rest. This time it's 13 young bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he lambs of the first year, all of them without blemish, along with their meal offering, fine flour mingled with oil, 3/10 part for the bull, 2/10 part for each ram of those 2 rams, and a several tenth part for each of the 14 lambs. 1 he-goat for a sin offering, a chatat, that's besides the regular continual burnt offerings, meal offerings, and drink offerings. On the second day, you shall present 12 young bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year without blemish, and their meal offering and drink offerings for the rams and lambs according to their number after the ordinance, and the he-goat for a sin offering in addition to the other things that, again, happen every day. Third day, we see 11 rams that are going to be offered, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year without blemish, and their meal offering, same as before, according to their number, 1 he-goat for a sin offering, continual burnt offering, and the meal offering and the drink offerings. What we're going to see here is that there's a pattern. It's actually going to go through all of these 7 days, and essentially the pattern is the number of he-lambs stays the same at 14, so 2 weeks essentially there. Of he-lambs. 2 rams, that's the same every day, but the number of bullocks seems to count down. It counts down. On the 4th day, it's down to 10. Then on the 5th day, it's 9, and so forth. We go through the rest of these here to the point where it says, on the 7th day, 7 bullocks, 2 rams, 14 he-lambs of the first year. So, I guess as an engineer, I look at this and say, okay, if you want to know how many he-lambs, it's always 14. But if you take the days, the number of the day, and the number of the bulls that you're going to offer on that day, it always adds up to 14. So as the days count up, the bulls count down. Meal offerings, the other things, the he-goats for the sin offerings, the chatat, that all, the drink offerings, those stay the same. Finally, it says here, on the 8th day, which would be the final day, you have a solemn assembly, you shall do no manner of servile work, but you shall present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire unto Yahuwah, a sweet savor, 1 bull, 1 ram, 7 he-lambs of the first year without blemish, and their meal offerings, and their drink offerings for each bull, the ram, the lambs, according to their number, 1 he-goat for a sin offering in addition to the regular other things, the continual burnt offering, meal offerings, drink offerings. These, it says, you shall offer unto Yahuwah in your appointed seasons, beside your vows and your free will offerings. So it's in addition to all of those things, whether they be your burnt offerings or your meal offerings or your drink offerings or your shalamim or your peace offerings. One slight difference. And I looked at this and I'm thinking, wait a second, did I misread it all this time? Because the eighth day is in fact different when it comes to the bulls that departs from the regular numbering. And I want to make sure I point this out. Seventh day, you have 7 bulls. Okay, you still have the 14 he-lambs, but 7th day, 7 bulls. All right, so again, that totals up to 14. But wait a minute. On the 8th day, remember we read this just now, you shall have a solemn assembly. You will do no work, but you shall present a burnt offering, an offering made by fire. Listen to this one. Now it's 1 bullock, 1 ram, 7 he-lambs of the first year without blemish, and a meal offering, the drink offering. So we do the count of the day plus the number of bulls adds up to 14, except on the 8th day, where all of a sudden we're down to just 1 bull. And I had never thought about that before. It's certainly an interesting combination and a different take. Okay, yeah, and because Pal Talk is continuing to screw things up here and mess with the microphones, I'll repeat the one thing I said, and that is there is a difference on the 8th day, and I want to make sure we're clear on that. That the 8th day, rather than adding up the days plus the number of bulls and equals 14, in this case, it's 1 bull on the 8th day. So it adds up to 9, interestingly. Okay, with that, we are at almost, but not quite, the end of the portion, because chapter 30 is the last verse in the parsha this week. It says, Moshe told the children of Israel according to all that Yahuwah had commanded Moshe. And then we're going to see a kind of a departure next week. We'll talk about that when we get there. But at this point, the parsha Pinchas is complete.